podcast. It's so wonderful to see you.
Been forever.
it's been minutes for us. We're recording another episode here. Yeah. Welcome to the first bonus episode, I guess, on the Rogue's Passage podcast channel. We just had so much shit we wrote down, probably because we've been filling out. We usually have like a Google document going. I'm Tanner Cherry, by the way. we usually have like a Google Doc going. We fill up with podcast topics and shit. And then last week, I hastily wanted to record the Alien Romulus podcast. So I want to talk about you and I, Brady Magpie. And sorry, I'm trying to segue into introductions.
Hi, I'm Oz from the Wonderful Wizard of Oz. And I'm just tickled pink to be here with the Rogues, as I am a rogue in addition to other types.
Yes. Formerly an intern, but that status changed immediately. For one, the coffees kept sucking, and I was like, okay, we got to do something. So either we hire him full time and he might get some incentive to, you know, make some positive change in his life and make some better coffee. But here we are.
Make better coffee.
I don't drink coffee. Yeah.
I railroaded the whole schedule by talking about Alien for an entire thing. And we do our podcast bi-weekly, so technically that means like it was a month worth of writing shit down here, right, to talk about. Lots happened in a month, guys. Like, we just finished doing an entire video talking about cool cards in Outlaws of Thunder Junction. One of the things I didn't get to talking about was how many fucking set codes are in that set. We'll get to that. I would love to talk about Alien Romulus, because I very hastily, I was like, we need to record this podcast talking about this film that's coming out before the leaks get to me or before the trailer drops. And the trailer dropped 2 days after we recorded. And so I released that episode technically of us talking about the trailer before it existed, but the trailer existed at that time. And now, all this time later, I'd love to talk about what you thought of that, Brady, and what I thought about that. And then we saw Dune Part 2 in there as well. Like, yeah, what a nerd out about that, so many things.
It's been, yeah, there's a lot to talk about. Well, a lot to talk about with Dune. As for the trailer, I have blissfully forgotten most of it. Ooh. I remember some facehuggers jumping, and that's where my memory, frankly, shutters off, because, I don't know, I have this, ever since Gandalf, you know, or not Gandalf, whatever, Dumbledore. Ever since Dumbledore died and everyone just decided to announce it in Harry Potter. The spoiler, the first time I ever became truly, viscerally aware of spoilers. My brain has done this weird evolution of sorts over the years in which my ADHD, I suppose, just works hand in hand with how little I remember everything. And
you seem to actively repel information, right? You're just like, I don't want to hear about it. I just want to go see.
Yeah, no, as soon as I don't care, it's in one ear and out the other. And for me specifically, the reason why I like first impressions are so important to me, I was born and raised on Aliens. Not Alien, but like my older brother, when he was like in his teens, when I was literally a child, would watch that almost every other day. So I got exposed to it in weird ways. Honestly, I would love to have my brother here to chat with you about Aliens, because he grew up with it, like eat, breathing, and shitting that shit. And that said, no, I am still very excited about it. I do recall my impression of the trailer being like, okay, this isn't some Aliens versus Predator bullshit CGI, you know, like I was honestly very, very intrigued. I was very excited about it. I am in no way surprised by how creepy it's going to be. I do recall, like, they're going very forward, I think, on original animatronics with some CGI.
Yeah, Fede Alvarez has said that he is allergic to green screens.
Yeah, and this
CGI
is amazing. So I think there's going to be a way more wow factor in a sci-fi horror than we've experienced since, dare I say it, Aliens.
I'll rant for a second, then I want to ask your opinion, Oz, on this.
Yeah.
So Fede Alvarez is the director of Alien Romulus. If you listen to our podcast about that, you know how excited I am for this particular film, because he is categorically the perfect kind of director to adopt making the right film for what the type of film that this franchise really needs, because Alien came out in 1979 and blew everybody's dicks off. And if they didn't have dicks, they grew a dick and blew it off. It was crazy.
It was the last reason my dad was like, no, I'm not going back to horror movies. I don't give a shit.
Yeah. It was incredible. And it was like super cosmic, like, space horror. Aliens came out. James Cameron took, like, again, feeding back into Dune Part 2, like, the Empire Strikes Back of 2024. Aliens was the first, or I guess, no, Aliens was after Empire Strikes Back. So Empire Strikes Back was, like, the greatest sequel ever, right? Aliens was the second greatest sequel ever. Blade Runner 2049 is in that league. Dune Part 2 is in that league. Like, Aliens took the franchise to an entirely new expanded level, but it was reverent of the original source material, right? Alien 3 was a detachment. Oh, God, I'm doing the thing again. I just want to talk about all these things.
I'm sitting here being like, bro, pick a topic.
Fede is really a big fan of the first two movies, and he wanted to make a movie that was had the feel of the first two films. So he decided to make a film that in the timeline is going to sit between those two. It's going to have a feel of either. It has an aesthetic of either. The cool thing about watching this trailer was that we learned that Romulus, like Prometheus and Covenant, is the name of the ship, right? But it's the name of one of the ships. Romulus and Remus are the name of these two ships that have been fused together to make the space station in this film. And the cool thing about it is that Romulus is the newer one and Remus is the older one, maybe? One of them is, like, built in the era of Aliens and one of them is built in the era of Alien. Like, the film takes place in between, and it's, like, showcasing the level of technology, like, old technology and new technology, and making a space station out of both. It's, like, the most beautiful, like, marriage of the two
now,
movies.
Is it macro-futurism still?
Cassette futurism, yeah. So, but the cool thing about that is that the ship that is styled like Alien is like that. The ship that's styled like Aliens is a little more modern, right?
That's cool.
It's showcasing the fact that there's, like, and this
actual
is the cool thing.
Technological progression.
This was one of the biggest things about that people were so pissed off about Prometheus and Covenant, is that they were supposed to be prequels, but they showcased way better technology.
Well, I mean, there's a lot to dissect when it comes to Prometheus and Covenant.
But in regards to the technology, Fede is actually trying to repair that injustice by saying, like, hey, the different years and eras of technology of space stations were built, they're still in operation, right? In Prometheus, the elites in Prometheus had the greatest technology. They had all this cool technology. But in Alien, Sigourney Weaver, like, you know, Ripley, Parker, Kane, like, Lambert, they're all on, yeah. They're space truckers.
Prometheus
they're space truckers.
Add up to the same timeline, though, as...
It does. Prometheus is canon. Covenant is canon. They're prequels. They are before Alien.
Okay.
Yeah. And it's supposed to be a prequel trilogy, but as you can...
Okay. I can see how... Because I was going to be like, well, I understand. You want to, it's kind of like how we see a bunch of shit cars on the road now compared to the Teslas we see driving around.
Yes.
So that's
multiple
the analogy,
eras
that makes
of technology
sense.
Happening at one time.
I feel like it's a... Not a sloppy... I think it's a very tasteful way to repair some loose ends.
I appreciate that Fede Alvarez is doing something... to try and repair.
It seems,
or like,
easy, but it also seems like the most Arkham's Razor approach to it.
Yeah, no, like, my question is, Oz, have you seen the trailer for Alien Romulus?
I have not.
Oh, God.
I've filthy casual.
Why
sorry.
Are you here?
Wait, we could technically, I could fire it onto the laptop here, do a live react. It's a minute long.
Oh, yeah.
And then we could talk about it.
Okay.
Let's do it.
Yeah, let's do it. I mean, this is absolutely a genuine reaction for it.
The year is 2024. Things are not that difficult.
Okay, we're going to bring this up.
So, honestly, the way that you guys have been talking about it, though, it kind of reminds me, and I hope that it actually gets as much hype as Rogue One for the Star Wars series.
Ooh,
so where
One.
It fits in right in between the series, so that it actually makes something that is going to it has consistency.
It's cohesive.
Yeah. Exactly.
So that's what Fede is trying to do. He promised to tell a standalone story with new characters, which was like a nod to people who were like, don't fuck with Ripley. Like, Ripley technically is floating in space in an escape capsule in this 57 years between the films, right? Between the first one and the second one, she's lost.
Yeah.
They can't touch that character, right? Alien Isolation filled in some of that story, talking about Ellen Ripley's son, Amanda Ripley. Or, sorry, daughter. Anyway, we'll we'll dive in. We'll just briefly subject him to the beauty of this trailer. It's only 1 minute and 2 seconds. It's the best minute of your life. I encourage you guys as well to watch it and then come back. We'll talk about this because now it's out. Here we go. Let's do it.
And Evil Dead.
Oh, I mean,
God. I'm so excited about that.
Sorry. Fuck your closed captions.
I kind of got the Dead Space vibe right off the bat.
Ooh. Run.
That's what I remember. Oh. Right there.
The jumping face huggers. He got.
God, it's goosebumps so all the way to my balls right now.
It's so goddamn good. It's so goddamn good. God. Okay, so we're getting another full trailer here coming up soon, right? That is the teaser trailer. And the teaser trailer has, if you freeze frame every shot, every scene, there's so much to get from it, right? If you want to go through a deep dive.
I don't want to see any other trailer. I can't. I personally cannot.
My blood is literally boiling right now in the best way. Every time I watch that trailer, which has probably been
one of those things that you're like, I want to see more, but at the same time, I don't want to spoil it. I want to see this thing fully. Oh, man.
I did the same thing for Dune 2. I am very proud of this because we've already been talking about Dune 2. Somehow avoided every single bit of media surrounding that movie. No trailer, no clips, no nothing, no Hollywood exec. Interview with the cast, not a single fucking dime, and I'm so grateful because
I appreciate that.
I cried multiple times in theater. I cried so.
I was moved to tears on my second viewing multiple times.
I did this a lot, like while she's just like, like,
yo, I'm gonna open this episode with Worm Ride from the original soundtrack. It's like the best. It's like my favorite song right now.
The last week and a half, I've been finding by who is this? I'm gonna find this right now. So, Sardaukar,
Sardaukar?
Sardaukar.
Yeah, Sardaukar is the Emperor's military.
Yeah, so Lost Stargates on Spotify. If you want to find them anywhere else, I'm pretty sure they might be everywhere else. But they do authentic Sardaukar chanting, and I've been falling asleep to this like a fucking weeb. And I'm not going to lie. My dreams have been wild. Wild.
Sick. Yeah, so we'll wrap up with Alien Romulus and we'll push over to Dune because I want to talk about that too. Romulus, I've been an alien geek my whole life. It's the pinnacle of my nerd obsession. I can't get enough. And it's been really hard, right? Because like, Alien Resurrection came out, I was still a kid. It was, that movie slapped. As a kid, it was like, dude, it was the first time I got to see an alien movie in theaters.
Ripley being all badass.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Dude, one of my favorite lines from that movie is like, when all the shit goes down and like, what's his name? The guy that plays,
The scientist?
No, the guy with the scar on his face or whatever. He's like really rough and like rugged.
Oh,
what's his
actor's name? Ron Perlman.
Yeah, Ron Perlman.
Fucking Perlman, the legend.
Ron Perlman is like, he's like freaked about like what's going on. He was like, I heard you encountered these things before, right? He's like, what did you do? And Ripley's like, I fucking died.
Like, no,
it had a bit of like a tasteful comedy to it.
Motherfucking Brad Dourif in the very last one. He was like, you're a beautiful, beautiful, beautiful butterfly. 13-year-old me did not need to see that. I mean, I'm glad I did. But holy fuck.
That would have been a moment.
Right before the newborn ate his face off.
I love Brad Dourif too. The man who was the voice of Chucky. If you know Child's Play,
as well as
get this.
Yeah.
And would go on to become Weeble Wormtongue in
Lord of the Rings. Lord of the Rings, yep. Yeah, he's very, very talented actor.
Apparently, and get this, he had something to do with Dune.
Yes, really? He was one of the Mentats in the David Lynch film.
David Lynch, that's why I don't know it. Yeah, that weirdo.
Yeah, the David Lynch film is
the Stanley Kubrick of psychedelia.
Yeah, Stanley Kubrick still made good films.
Nah.
Anyway, let's talk about. Let's talk about Denis Villeneuve and Dune Part 2. So, God, I actually. The funny thing is here on lunch today, I'm sitting on the crapper in Canmore at an OPA. And.
Good visual. I can see it now.
Just similar. How about you marinate on that one? I was watching this video of somebody talking about how the third part of this film is maybe not guaranteed to happen.
Oh, really?
It's not the third part. Sorry. Dune Part 1 and Dune Part 2, mm-hmm. which have been released, is the first book, Part 1, Part 2. The first book was called Dune, right? So that's why it's Dune Part 1, Dune Part 2. The second novel is called Dune Messiah, which will be the third film. Hans Zimmer has stated that Denis Villeneuve has dropped a script on his desk.
Okay.
All of this has been in motion. Everybody was like, the third one's guaranteed. As of the past, like, number of days, there's some talk about whether or not it might be because of the script. I don't know. The second book sucks. I'll tell you right now. Dune Messiah is not exactly a great story. It's great if you are, like, really invested. It's not as easy to adapt into a good film.
I don't know.
I'm wondering if they bail on it.
But, I could see that happening, actually,
Hollywood
just because...
Magic. That's my defense.
Hollywood yeah, magic. And absolutely. And, I mean, there's been more than a few movies that have been released just for the money grab. And that's definitely something that they could do for those hardcore Dune fans. Yeah. And, yes, you want to... For having Messiah, it's nice to have it for... finishing up and having the closure for it. Keep it going.
Would it make sense to turn Messiah into a series, do you think?
Well, so they've done that before, right?
There's the next movie.
One of the books is called Children of Dune, and the Sci-Fi Channel did an adaptation of Children of Dune in a 10-episode series, or maybe it was 2 seasons, mm-hmm. and that was like 15-plus years ago. They've done that before, right? And also, I'll say Dune, Heretics of Dune, is currently being adapted into a television series as well. So there's a Dune television series coming. It's from what I've heard, it's not following the source material really, really heavily.
Okay.
And a lot of these reasons, I'd like to point out the fact that sometimes that you don't want to follow these source materials is because the first novel was a fucking banger. And what we've seen in theaters is the part one and part two of the first novel. It's a fucking incredible story.
With the exception of apparently 10 years.
Yeah. Every other book written in that series, which I think there's 17 now,
there's
they're
a lot.
Not as good. Or like the whole universe is an incredible, great, beautiful story, but none of them really hold a candle to like how good the first novel was.
I don't know. It's kind of like, okay, now I'm going to pose this to you as an Aliens fan. Now, as someone who is holding on to the Weyland-Yutani dream, because arguably, and I'm going to assume, the first, second, and third movies only, primarily. Primarily.
No, okay.
I would say the first and second one are probably in your lifeblood.
Yes, like, first and second one are S tier.
So yeah, so what I'm saying is, like, could that not still maybe be applicable? Is there a chance that the second Dune could hold that kind of magnitude, or maybe Dune 1 and 2 is all that most fans need going forward?
See, this actually proves, or this solidifies my point. Me I want more at all costs weeb that is so invested, I will take everything you can give me. Mm-hmm. But in terms of a studio spending $300 million to make a film and trying to sell it to people who aren't invested, that's what they're worried about, right? They're worried about trying to sell a movie that might be bad to people that aren't invested or like super
fully in it.
I mean, I think they're gonna fuck the boat if you create so much amazing momentum as you do with the first and second movies.
You have to do it. You have to do it, especially because at the end of the second film, they made some significant rearrangements.
It was kind of like Gandalf going to Minas Tirith when he was like, I got to research if this ring is going to burn your dick off, sonny. And, you know, like, he took, like, what, 15 fucking years to come back to Frodo, right? So, anyways.
Oh, my God, that's going to make a great YouTube short.
Dude, that's the same fucking thing, though, you know? Like, apparently... buddy, when he drinks the potion, because I was so shooketh by so, like, everything, like, my nerd divergence was going crazy, so I was trying to keep up with the story, especially as someone who has listened to before it was taken down from Spotify when audiobooks and all sorts of regulations got enacted. But I was listening to this like voice acted quarter, and I could never get by it because it was so relaxing. I always fell asleep. But I always listened to the first quarter of the book several times, and I was like, okay, following, this makes sense, this makes sense, this makes sense. Okay, now this suddenly does not make any sense. And the movie, I realize, okay, this is where I left off in the story. But this is still really cool. And as someone who does not know the story at all, concluding, to hear, because we brought down Derek, I brought him down for the movie. Yep. It turns out Derek was a humongous mega snob. Yeah, mega fan. I had no idea when I invited him. I just wanted him to have a nice little date night, you know, my boyfriend for hire for the evening. And straight up, I was like, oh, yeah, all this information just being like thrown on me. I'm like, well, you know, at the end of the day, I think Hollywood, much like the MCU, you know, like you have to take certain liberties. I've never heard of anything being true to the source perfectly, ever.
The Last of Us.
No, not even that, unfortunately.
Well, but God, it was close.
What the Last of Us wanted to do, because this is what the Last of Us wanted to do, and I think I heard this from you, is the author or the writer, the core writer of The Last of Us wanted to do justice to characters that was not pre-existing.
Yeah, true.
And
true.
All sorts of stuff. So there was creative liberties that were taken for the sake of the show.
The person who was like the show creator, of the show creators.
Beyond that, I'm not going to say shit all about Last of Us, because that show, arguably in my top three, until I die.
Yeah.
Until I fucking die.
Yeah.
So
the changes they made were changes that had been eating at them for years, right?
And like, came from the source creator, for the writer.
Yeah.
It came from him. So I'm like, oh. Anyways, that said, loved Dune. It was insane. I literally cried multiple times. I remember when they shot the spoiler, they shoot rockets. And I looked over and for a moment at you and you were like, oh. You had this like...
Oh yeah, the House of Atreides, the family nuclear arsenal.
Yeah. There was a Liberty Pie moment in his face. Oh.
Yes, that was it. That and the Emperor's ship, like the Emperor's like spherical fucking chrome ship.
Yeah.
Oh, there's the cinema. I can't remember. I think it's a YouTube channel called Every Frame a Painting, and it very much like analyzes certain films where like you could stop a fucking film at any point and analyze how beautiful and how like the composition and the lighting and like the, and it is, Dune was like, at any point in time, if time just stopped and I had to just stare at that one frame, I'd be happy. It was so fucking pretty.
You know what? That is everything that you want to look for in a movie. I mean, I know this is going to be a weird reference for it, but if you're going to go for a pizza, you go for a cheese pizza, and if the cheese pizza is good, every pizza is good.
Yeah.
And if you can pause a movie at any point and just say, that is art, man, you know.
Dude, I love that. Like the benchmark test, right? Like the litmus test. I need to eat your cheese pizza.
Mm-hmm.
I need to know how you do a cheese pizza.
Exactly. And it's like seeing the Dune movie just be like the Dune movie being that cheese pizza that is just perfection. You know. Oh, yeah. Oh, it's lovely.
Denis Villeneuve has done now, what, four films that are some of the greatest ones I've ever seen in the past decade?
Soon to be Willy Wonka.
Really?
What do you mean? He did Willy Wonka?
No, he's been confirmed as the new Willy Wonka. Do you remember what we were watching?
No. Timothy Chalamet is the new Willy Wonka. Timothy Chalamet is Paul Atreides in Dune.
Oh,
I'm talking about Denis Villeneuve, the director. The director and writer.
The names sound identical. Forgive the HD, it's in full crank.
No, Denis Villeneuve is the director, and his life's passion was to do Dune. But he also directed Blade Runner 2049. And Arrival.
Yeah.
He did the Blade Runner sequel, and he did Arrival, and he did the two Dune films. So like four of the greatest films I've seen in the past decade. Arrival was a mindfuck, and it was also very cinema, like just pretty, like, oh.
So there was a while ago. I brought this up a little while ago with Tanner. He's like, that don't check out. But now there's a fun tangent. I think this is mostly just fans creating this. But so we're just talking about Arrival. While Arrival, now this is just the first thing that comes up in the IMDb thing from the Google searching. While Arrival seems more grounded than Dune with its focus on the human protagonist on Earth, Arrival may have more in common with Dune than initially believed. Many characters in Dune may appear alien, but most are humans or started out as humans. And literally, and I think we'll put a link here because it's just fun to debate. But the director, it was conjectured, theorized, that Arrival was basically the
universe of Dune
being like the creatures that the doctor
the
was,
heptapods.
Yeah, what's her name? Oh, that actress again, absolutely incredible for that role. Talking to these ginormous weird finger creatures. Basically, she was talking to salad fingers. Let's be honest. She was talking to salad fingers in space. And the correlations being that these are literally from the Dune universe from the future, and Spice is that crazy and blah, blah, blah. Now, obviously, I don't think this has any real...
Yeah, you told this to me. You were like, I think Arrival is like secretly set in the Dune canon.
Yeah, no.
And
so
I was like, are you fucking kidding me? I looked into it. I actually found the first post. I found the original fan theory.
It's all Reddit. Yeah. So like, Villeneuve Arrival and Dune share the same universe. Heptapods are not aliens. They're a time traveling guide.
Yeah, they're the guild navigators.
Guild navigators.
The thing, like, there was, I loved, man, you ever want to watch like nerds just take boxing gloves and beat the fuck out of each other? you'd start a thread like this on Reddit. everybody going back and forth in there. It was hilarious. There was people who were just like, you fucking numbskull. I can't, like guild navigators can't go back in time, right? That was like the biggest thing that made this like not canon was like the guild navigators, it's never been stated in any of the books that they can go back in time. They can't go back. If they could go back in time a day, the entire structure of what their power is completely different, right? Spice allows you to basically achieve near or immortality, and allows you to travel interstellar space.
Yeah, long amount of times. Yeah,
like warp drive type things. Now, all of these things, if you think about the theory of relativity, those things like thrust you forward into the future, right? The faster you travel in space, the faster you travel in time. All of these, like, man, there was just nerds just literally trying to curb stomp each other over their theories on this. And I found it quite entertaining. If you ever want to just look this up and go to Reddit, it's worth a good half hour of reading and chuckling.
You ever want to hear and smell a bunch of nerd dick just beating itself upon itself? Yeah, just go to Reddit. Frankly, just go to Reddit about anything.
You know what you should do? Is go to IMAX, please, before Dune Part 2 is out of theaters. Please see this film in IMAX. When those nukes blow up,
at the base,
dude. Like, there. I actually, from a concerned patron right now, I will tell you, I did not go see Oppenheimer in IMAX, and I'm pissed. I'll never get to do that again, I don't think. Right?
It's a movie about bombs. Whatever.
It's a movie about bombs.
Also, Sunday, me and Brandon are going to go see Godzilla.
You're going
monsters
this coming Sunday to see that?
Yeah, we're going
to
go. Yeah.
Godzilla X Kong.
Nice. Yeah, in the evening. Yeah.
Damn. Have fun. Yeah, that'll be good. I mean, I always find it funny when people go into movies like Godzilla or like Pacific Rim or something like that, and they're expecting something that has plot, and you're like, no, you're here for giant monster battles. Don't expect anything else.
Isn't Pacific Rim a gay bar in California?
No, it's very, very, very close. So it's a bunch of very hyper sexualized young people jumping into the body of a, you know,
it was like
big basically Voltron. It's a very lazy.
It's Gundams versus Kaiju. But it's just what it is.
But with Taibo.
Like, yeah.
It's the funniest goddamn thing I've ever seen in my life. Yeah, let's all do this at once. You know, it's bad.
It was bad.
Yeah, I mean, it's bad, but you're not going there expecting a good movie. You're going there for monster battles.
I know. Who directed it again? They were really trying to ride on the coattails of Michael Bay with his freaking Transformers movies. You're like, oh yeah, big movies,
Michael Bay, big robots.
People will buy it up. They're smart. Well, at least we got kaijus in that movie. That's all I gotta say. Big crab monsters, at least. That's it.
Well, I hope you enjoy your baby monkey
drama. Yeah,
baby monkey drama.
Yeah.
Are you with Godzilla or no Kong with the big power fist with the Nintendo Power Glove?
It'd be funny. It's like me and Brandon go see King Kong. We come away, but like we accidentally saw this remake of Gorillas in the Mist, and really, really upset with life right now.
Speaking of Sigourney Weaver, wasn't she in that?
Yeah, I see that one of the most depressing movies she's ever been in. I think ever acted in. Yeah. Frankly. Gorillas in the Mist. True story.
All right, cultures. Let's move laterally to another topic that I've got written down on this long list. I got to look this up, actually. I wanted to just... I guess we're taking this back to a Magic the Gathering spot. Thunder Junction set codes. I want to do this just as an informative thing for people. because y'all remember Aftermath, mm-hmm. March of the Machines Aftermath.
I love the cards, but everything else was bad.
Well, the cards were fine, but the way that they decided to try this new way of like putting these cards out into the wild was, let's do a main set, but let's make a little bit more, and then we'll package that as a completely different set that you have to buy with 5-card booster packs. And so if you buy a box of it or whatever, or if you buy 6 packs, what happened was you ended up just getting like a horrendous amount of duplicates, right? There's only like 50 cards in the whole set and 5 cards per pack. And it ended up being like this really, it was a really poor delivery, and it flopped really hard because of that, which actually might make the cards more expensive because nobody fucking opened it. Yeah. Because the minute people started to open it, they were like, this is bullshit. Just buy it on the secondary market. There's a high finesse to making a booster pack and making it fun to open, making it not only making it fun to open for people, but making it profitable and organizable to open for stores. And here's another thing. Let's talk about, let's say you made a master set and you charged $5 for it, for the whole box, right? There's, let's say in the box is 36 booster packs or 24 usually in a master set. And let's say there's mana drain, there's fucking blah, 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 this and that. There's $600 worth of value in the box, but you only charge $10 for people to buy it, right? Doesn't this sound wonderful?
It sounds glorious.
Glorious.
If only.
But I'll tell you about the real world when that happens. Mm-hmm. Wizards releases the set. They charge $10 for it. The distributor, blah, 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 blah. Not a single one of us sitting here will ever see one of those fucking boxes.
Absolutely because
they all
not.
Get basically like scalped by the distributors, the people who have access to them first. The distributors are like,
I pull all the cards and sell them separately. For this.
I'm just going to rip it open and sell it on the second. It destroys the supply chain. It interrupts things so heavily, right? Like Wizards has such a tough time nailing value for price. And if the expected value is too high, regular consumers don't get to buy the product because scalpers and distributors just snipe it all and make it so that nobody can actually get it at their stores. But if there's not enough value in the box, it doesn't sell and the distributors are stuck with it. They are laced with this very difficult distribution method and model, right? They tried a new thing with Aftermath, and I'm going on this rant because it relates to Outlaws of Thunder Junction, but they tried this whole new model and it fucking flopped, right? They tried a new thing, which props to try new things, always try new things, but it was bad. And everybody was like, we're not buying this.
Except heroin. Yeah, don't just think about it. Don't just think about it on a whim. Like, you know what? You know what I haven't done at all today? I haven't tried heroin for the first time in my life.
You should probably go pick your kid up from school first.
Yeah,
probably.
Yeah, please. Yeah, don't.
Priorities.
Anyway, the reason this relates is because Aftermath for March of the Machines flopped so bad because of the distribution model. But because of the way Wizards work, they had like 2 years of sets printed, or sorry, not printed, but like organized and built that were planned to have Aftermath sets. And Outlaws of Thunder Junction was one of those sets that was supposed to have an Aftermath set. Now,
is that why there's so many legendaries? No, it's just
that's no, actually that's still just in the main normal set. So here's the weird thing.
So are we going to have an Aftermath set for the Thunder Junction?
We
as well?
Were, but because that failed, they then basically, do you know how some packs, what was the one that had the Multiverse Legends? Do you remember that one? It was March of the Machine. Wasn't
March
it?
Of the Machine.
Yep.
And there was one card in the back of each pack that wasn't standard legal.
Yeah.
But it was from a whole other sheet. It was commander legal. It was whatever, right? So Outlaws of Thunder Junction has like
text usually relating to fighting off Phyrexians.
Outlaws of Thunder Junction has like 3 of those. There's like 3 other sheets. One of them was a whole Aftermath set. One of them was special guests, kind of like the Lost Caverns of Ixalan Mana Crypt.
Okay.
The really nice one.
Yeah.
And then they also have the big score, like 3 different like set codes that are all going to like share this last slot in the booster pack. So the frustrating thing about this is the fact that
nothing to do with anything.
They have a lot to do with everything. They're just not standard legal, right?
Oh.
So this is a standard set. So if you're opening a pack and you want to play in standard or modern or pioneer, one of the cards in the pack might not be legal in that format. For instance, one of the big score cards is fucking Mana Drain. It's a wanted poster Mana Drain. They've got Reanimate, like these crazy old school cards.
Weird. Those are both very weak though.
I mean, I think they're just filling up for the reprints that they need to have happen.
In all seriousness, this seems like kind of a shit show. I didn't really...
So, yeah, this is why I wanted to bring it up.
I'm kind of upset a little bit, but at the same time, well, I'm kind of like, well, they're giving me all the content anyways. I don't have to worry about any of these weird hurdles that aren't going to be
What's funny is Brady, as strictly a commander player, this doesn't mean anything to you, right? Like, every card you open, you can play. You can put it in whatever deck you want.
Shut up. I've dabbled with...
I'm just saying that, like, let's say you're not a commander player. Let's say you're the type of person that, for instance, that you play standard.
Yeah.
And you're, one of your mythics that you open is not legal in your format, right? But then again, like, you can sell it. You can always sell it. The confusing part is you need a fucking Wikipedia page to figure out what format one booster pack contains, right? So we got standard Outlaws of Thunder Junction. The set code is OTJ. So if you look at a card here on the bottom left corner, that one says SLP. That is a secret layer promo.
C-U-N-T?
See you
next
time.
I'm on fire right now. I'll stop.
So we've got OTJ is the regular standard set code. Like the main set, they're all going to have OTJ. And then we've got OTC. Those are like basically now that we've got like a new type of booster pack, there's like a slot for cards on the list and there's a slot for cards in the special guests.
Yeah.
And there's a slot. So you're going to have you open a booster pack from Outlaws of Thunder Junction and potentially have 3 to 4 different set codes, which is strange, right? There's OTJ, OTC, SPG special guests. OTP is the breaking news. And then there's BIG, the big score, the vault set. Like, it's the weirdest thing, and I don't know. Like, I know that they had a failure with Aftermath. I don't know if this is the way to... I guess this is the way to do it, because it's just one fucking booster pack. It's all just in one pack.
I'm unsure. Like, I see it on both sides for sure. Because when you have... for being someone, I don't like playing things that are in rotation. I don't like my cards being knocked out and not being able to play them anymore. I mean, anybody that plays the standard and goes through the rotations, all the power to you. If you love it, do it.
Yeah.
But at the same time, I like being able to play all of the cards.
This is why Commander has risen to the top.
Exactly.
Because it's the legacy format of all cards. Every card ever printed. 99
cards, question mark? Because Commander's number one.
Yeah. I mean,
looking at you, Dan. Love you.
And so being able to get things that are not just from the set and having a little bit of a surprise for it, yeah, great. And for me personally, I find that awesome, because I can find things that are not from the set, and if it doesn't work for me, you know what? Yeah, sell it and pick up the money so that you can buy another pack.
And they did this when they introduced the set booster, because it used to be just the draft booster was the booster.
Mm-hmm.
It was a 15 card booster pack. Magic, every set just had the regular booster pack, and then they were like, what if we made a collector booster and a set booster and a draft booster? And a lot of people got confused because they were like, well, wait, I saw this card spoiled on the internet. What booster do I have to buy if I want to get that card, right? And that was the confusing part, was it was no longer now, I want to buy Ravnica, mm-hmm. or I want to buy World Wake or whatever, and the cards in those sets are in those booster packs. Now it was like, well, which pack do I have to buy if I want that card? And they took that feedback and they've pared it down a bit. Now set boosters are gone.
Mm-hmm.
Draft boosters are gone. They fucking slammed those bitches together at 195 kilometers an hour, and now it's called a play booster. So the set
best
booster
of both worlds.
The set booster was meant to be like more exciting to open. You could get a foil in every pack. There was 2 or 3 rares, and there was a slot at the list or whatever, right? Like, mm-hmm. you get a random card from ages ago.
Yeah.
And that was a means to reprint cards that they didn't have any other place to reprint them, right? So it was a means to, like, bring more of the old... Like, it was a good idea. But people were getting confused with, like, what fucking cards are in what set or what pack, right? So they were like, screw it. We'll just jam everything back into a play booster. But now they've done... They're like, okay, now that we have the play booster, Murders at Karlov Manor was the first set that did it. And then, like, the set following that is like, now your play booster's got 57 varieties of Heinz in it, right? Like, ketchup, mustard, we've got burger sauce. Like,
we're going back to the 90s. We're bringing back purple ketchup. Imagine that caused cancer.
Oh my god, yeah, that was ridiculous.
Yeah, you know, you got to get your jam and peanut butter in all in one jar.
Oh, this is a great time to bring up the nine layers.
Australian, cool, we got Vegemite. It's all good.
It's a great time to bring up the nine layers of jazz sandwich. You ever want to do just like the crazy sandwich is going to mess your head up? You take one piece of bread and you do three vertical stripes of three different spreads, right? You can do peanut butter, marmalade, raspberry jam. And then you take your other piece of bread and you do horizontal stripes of three other different types. Honey, you know, whatever. You do your things. And then when you put it together, you have nine unique quadrants of flavor combinations. It's jazz.
I've never tried that. And we're going to be doing that soon.
Every bite is an adventure.
Yeah, I've actually never tried it myself. So we probably should. Maybe that'll be like, we want to do a Hot Ones episode for like the old cooking.
Well, we have the last dad upstairs.
Have two or three of the Hot Ones sauces.
I mean, honestly, I actually, so for that, I love that they're doing that. They're bringing in and reprinting cards that obviously need a reprint because the price has just gone nutty.
Yeah.
And so because of that, love it. But it makes me wonder if through the standard rotation is the place to put that.
Yeah. So I think the way that they've justified it is that, like, because all five of these set codes are in Outlaws of Thunder Junction booster pack. It's like that on Arena too. So the big scores, there's not a lot of these cards, but they might potentially be opened on Arena. And in Arena, now we got Reanimate, Mana Drain, Mind Break, Trap, or Legally and Timeless, and Historic and stuff, right? So that, like, they're it's a way for them to, like, onboard these cards into places they need to be without having to do, like, a unique release or whatever. I don't know. I would never want to work at Wizards ever. Oh my god! Like, I love playing this game. I love doing it as my hobby. We have gotten into content creation, which does feel like a job.
I would love to, because as soon as they hire me, I'll start plagiarizing everything around me.
Oh my god! All right, segue.
The trouble with plagiarism? Well, it fucks you when you're caught.
So let's talk about Trouble in Pairs.
Yeah,
Bring this card up here because it's what's his name? Trouble in Pairs. Ooh, Pores. Trouble in Pairs. It's Faye.
Why I keep looking at it too, I don't like what happened to it, because I've seen the original. You look at the
original, like, it's a cyberpunk
an orcish babe in the back. Originally, some weirdly skinned cyberpunk babe in 2000, but otherwise, here we have an orc. Maybe, I don't know.
It looks like a human.
It looks like Obeka in the background.
Yeah, it actually kind of does look like Obeka. Yeah, yeah. They may have even made that a purpose of doing so, but either way, you look at the person in the very front.
Let's frame what we're talking about first here. We're talking about the card Trouble in Pairs. We're talking about the fact that the artist has been nailed to the cross for not only plagiarism on this card. We'll talk about how the roots run deep with this one. Because, so what happened was, this card came out in the Murders of Karlov Manor Commander deck, and here's the weird thing. Okay, so Faye Dalton has made many Magic cards before, or art for many Magic cards before. If you're in the league of Wizards is calling you on the phone to make art for one of their cards, I mean, you've made it, right? You made it as an artist. So usually if you're making a poster for someone's wedding or for somebody's living room, go ahead and plagiarize or whatever. If you're making, don't plagiarize someone else's work for a card that's going to go in print in the millions.
For eternity.
And worldwide.
Yeah, worldwide forever.
For eternity.
Like, you're going to get caught. Now, yeah. The worst part about this is that they plagiarized an artist that also makes Magic cards. Like, I can't remember.
The ones you caught it up.
Yeah. I can't remember the name of.
And there's no way that you can get away with it. Like, were they just trying to skirt it under the rug? Is that.
So it was this character here on the right. You'll see it on screen on the YouTube. This character here on the right and the archway behind them and the stairs. And this whole, like, the whole background and this character were all from a piece of cyberpunk art from 20 years ago.
Okay.
For a novel or something.
I think it's more than that. It's like 24 years.
Yeah. But the artist who did that also is a commissioner, or not a commissioner, sorry, a subcontractor through Wizards of the Coast and makes Magic cards as well. And that artist was just like,
excuse me,
what in the fuck? And because of this, Yeah, do you have the other artist's name up here? Because we got to give...
Can we just... Okay, for a moment here, just real quick introduction. You'll notice the person in the front, okay? The detailing on this person's particular face is horrible. And then you go to the one in the back where they've clearly plagiarized some of the original detailing.
Yeah, all the same lighting colors. And
The lighting and the detailing is phenomenal. It looks so clean. But then some of the armor on it's been obviously kind of like superimposed. Yeah. Do you see what I mean?
Donato Giancola is the artist that has been plagiarized.
Donato Giancola.
Now, the funny thing is, so this happened, right? And then Wizards made a statement. They're like, yeah, this is bullshit. Like, you essentially, your career's over. Well, you can go ahead and write book covers for whatever. I don't know. Like,
little fappy clappy covers for your middle-aged moms. Good for you.
Yeah, but you're not doing art for Magic anymore.
Yeah, you essentially were like working for the highest bidder in fantasy art in the world, and you screwed up your career.
Shot yourself in the damn foot.
But then
shut your dick off.
2 hours after this article came out, people did a whole bunch of cross-referencing on previous art images. So this artist, Faye Dalton, also did the... Did you guys see the baseball card, like the rookie card secret layer planeswalkers of the Gatewatch?
No.
Oh, I got to show you this. Hold on.
Please.
Oh, no. Baseball card secret. Oh, my God. I can't type. Secret layers. So there was an Ajani. They were actually super dope, right? I'll bring up Garuk here. They were double-sided planeswalkers, just like a regular baseball card would be. You'd have the card on the front, and then you'd have the stats on the back, right?
Right.
Like you're. So this was Fall Super Drop 2023, Magic the Baseballing. It's super cool, but the uncool thing about it is that Faye Dalton did the Ajani, and like they're super cool. The secret layers are dope, but I guess like this whole lion face and head. People Google searched lion face, and like the first thing that came up in Google was the piece of art that he plagiarized for this one, and then they just kept going, and it's like, oh yeah, this person just got like deleted, and like it's Fay Dalton, is it? Fay.
More plagiarism uncovered by... Oh, yeah, look at that.
Yeah, you've got the side-by-side here.
Oh, no. Oh,
you got to go continue. Oh, jeez.
Yeah. Oh, that's... Oh, bro. What? Can you stop fucking your own bed? Like, bro.
I mean, when so, you're an artist, tragic. That's what you're expected to do, is to not plagiarize. You're supposed to produce original content
at
for
least
it.
Faye Dalton here did the most realistic response, which was... hide from everyone. Whereas what the
guy
who
deleted
did,
their Instagram,
the guy who did Wayfarer's Bubble was like, whatever, man.
Oh,
I knew it.
Yeah, that's right. So the guy that plagiarized the Wayfarer's Bauble in the Commander set for Lost Caverns of Ixalan, his response to Wizards was, he's like, everybody does this shit. Like, I do this to all my pieces, and so like
that's unacceptable.
This is two in like three or wait, Lost Caverns of Ixalan, Murders of Carlin's. So it was. 6 months, two in 6 months.
I do like even Fane the Broker. The first time I started thinking about this, like Fane the Broker looks remarkably like Tom Middleston.
Yeah,
yeah, yeah, yeah. Like him.
I'm gonna have to see it side by side. Yeah,
Fane the Broker.
Oh yeah.
Do you not see?
Oh yeah,
Tom Middleston.
That is absolutely.
Hiddleston,
sorry,
Hiddleston?
which
Loki, actor?
I'm
Loki.
Seeing, yeah, Tom Hiddleston, absolutely. Yeah.
No, now here's the thing: there is an acceptable level of not tracing or copy and pasting, but reference imaging.
Mm-hmm.
There is a very acceptable level of reference imaging in the art world.
True.
That's what I've learned through all this. But
I mean,
what's that one?
There's a certain point where you cross that line, like yes. With Ellen Page and. Oh, shoot. It's like my favorite game, and you just talked about it being on the movie. Last of Us.
Oh, Last of Us.
Yeah, yeah, Ellen Page for The Last of Us, and she...
Ellie?
Yeah, for Ellie.
Yeah.
Like, you take a look at it, I'm pretty sure that's for the second one. They had to change Ellie's likeness because it was just too similar.
Bella Ramsey was the actress.
Ashley Johnson was the voice actor.
Ashley Johnson, yeah. Who's also
She looks like Ellen Page.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, Ashley Johnson did make it into the season one of The Last of Us. She was actually very... Oh,
she was the mom.
Yeah.
The
ceremoniously, Ashley Johnson got to be Ellie's mom.
Like,
she was the voice actor for Ellie in the game, right? So she got to be the mother that gave birth to her in the show. That was fucking beautiful.
Earlier that day, literally just, like, was watching some... Like, I can't remember. It was, like, one random episode of Critical Role. I was like, wait. Wait a moment.
Yeah, that's Ellie.
Wait a moment. That voice even, like, there is...
Ashley Johnson's very often on Critical Role.
Back to Last of Us. Who is it again? The voice actor for Joel was also on the show.
Yes, Troy Baker.
Troy Baker. He was for the... favorite parts of the season. No, amazingly, phenomenally acted, amazing. Everything about that was good. But holy fuck, did I want to slap a bitch.
Troy Baker's character?
No, the actress who wanted to just brutally murder the guy with his younger brother, the mute kid.
Oh, jeez, what were their names?
Yeah, I know that. So, and she was the one who kept like, ignore the problem underground. I don't care. I'm just all about revenge. Who cares about contingencies and whatever?
Oh, you're talking about
the one in charge of the.
She wasn't actually in the game. She was an addition.
Oh. Yeah. Well, either way, fuck that bitch. Made me angry.
Yeah,
God, we want to kill a child. Oh my God, what's wrong with you?
Talking about shows with Game of Thrones characters and actors and fucking... I don't get to say which one, but I get to work on another one in a week. I'm going back into the film industry.
Yeah, and that's exciting, and that's where we'll stop talking about it.
Yeah, I'm not allowed to tell. But yeah, I am... I'm taking on a job. I'm hoping I'll be on for...
That's your hint. We've done this before.
No, yeah. I can say that I worked on The Last of Us. That was ages ago now. I'm working on a Netflix show coming up. So hopefully I'll still be able to record content with the boys and edit it, because I'm going to be working more hours and waking up early. And
I want to fish for more interns.
Yeah. Thus why I'm here.
We need so much help. Anything else? I don't know, Brady.
Not a white padded room.
I have some things to rant about. What's our time looking like?
I think we're at 52 minutes. We're actually at a pretty decent spot.
I have to go to bed kind of soonish, but I do have some things I want to rant about. So there is a lot of talk right now as to how to play the game, unspoken rules, all that kind of bullshit. Now, what I want to start curbing for people's attention is the possibility of people, like-minded individuals, primarily, gathering together to say, screw that, and revel in their evil, mischievous bullshit ways. And honestly, y'all, there's a place for you in this world of Magic the Gathering in which you are permitted to exist and share your opinion comfortably. Maybe not with everyone else around the table. Maybe not with most people anywhere.
Yeah, by yourself in your closet.
We're looking at you, Turgrid. Toxrol, oh god, every other staxy piece of shit card in the game. But you know what? Own your power. And, I don't know, be more fearless about approaching why it is that you don't care about people's feelings. Because you know what? That is valid. It's valid. Okay? Own your power. That's all I gotta say. That's all I gotta say. Bit of a hot take.
Brady, I appreciate you speaking to my heart.
When you play Land Destruction, I play Hand Hate.
I love stealing things. And I know that everyone hates that. I have a deck that is Land Destruction and Hand Disruption on a mass scale, which I'm pretty sure that the Command Zone just said that I'm a piece of shit for that. So yeah, I'm cool for that. I'll take it, and you know what? I will run that piece of shit flag as far as I can.
It is a bit of a hot take, but the amount of horrible explanations I've heard over the years as to, like, why are you playing Inyaz, the Gale Storm, or why do you play Toxrol, or, like, literally, like, fundamentally, sure, it's kind of like, well, if Wizards didn't make this big fancy gun, I wouldn't want to play with it. Sure, yeah, sure. That's 100% accepted, okay? That's also part of the question. Why would you want to play with a gun like that to begin with? Like, you know, that's it? That's all? I'm not saying to not do it. Honestly, like I just said, own your power. Have fun. Play Xander. I don't care. Make it good, though.
I gotta
make sure it can fight off everyone who hates you.
I got a question, and I guess maybe think about this quite a bit because, right? I think, man, the reaction to someone having Xander or Toxrill in the command zone versus if they draw it from their library and play it is vastly different.
Oh, 100%.
Oh, yeah.
Right?
100%.
And that is the interesting thing about Commander. It's I'd like to point out the, I'm going to say failed attempt at bringing the Commander thing, because Commander is so popular, they wanted to be like, well, why don't we just put Commander in Standard? And they put Companion in Ikoria. And it was like, yeah, now we can make it so that people playing Standard and Modern can have a creature in their command zone, basically, which they did a very clever way of doing that. You had to have it in your sideboard. And if, when you start the game, if you have a companion in your sideboard, you can then move it to the companion zone, right? It was like this little workaround. It fucking ruined competitive formats. It literally ruined. From the weeks following that, it was like, it didn't matter if the companion was good. It was just, well, cool. Now, if you're not playing a companion, you're the sucker that's only playing 7 cards in your opening hand. When I'm playing 8, and I get one that synergizes with my deck that I have every game, all the time. If it's the Kahira, the Selesnya one, it's like, you can only have this in the companion zone if all the creatures in your deck are of these creature types. Well, cool. Blue-white control doesn't play any creatures. I'm just going to put this in the fucking command zone or the whatever, and I just have an 8th card in my hand every game. And it was the imbalance of having the consistency of being able to cast that card every time. On turn 5, you know, whatever, Toxrill or whatever is coming down on that turn every time. You know, Turgrid's coming down on that turn every time. And if you kill it, it's right back in my hand.
That's an entire different segue. I would honestly argue that, yeah, no, a lot of these cards, especially when they become commanders, they're flashy and amazing, and yeah, you want your deck to do what they do. But frankly, you should just build the deck to do what it do and have that as the secret commander, the one that is likely never going to cost you 2 extra if it keeps getting removed, with at the expense of only what? Exile being the biggest weakness in which your strategy of the deck can truly tick? Yeah, no giver. Honestly, probably throwing your beast, whoever it be, and there's lots. There's thousands of commanders now at this point, and so many of them are just rude and hateful. Maybe there's at least for sure 100 of a list of like 100 tops most hated. I'm sure
I would issue
which group you're in, right?
I would issue a globally. Challenge.
I'm talking globally. I'm thinking more generalized. Yeah. Like what people can vote that. Yeah. No. Turgrid for sure. Xander for sure. Toxrill for sure. I guess Leovold or Leopold. Who's that one?
Leovold.
That,
yeah.
Yeah. The original one that got banned immediately.
So I would issue a challenge to everyone. Instead, so there are many decks that are like, you have the commander and it is crazy powerful, and those commanders are kill on sight.
Yep.
Like, they can't touch the battlefield sometimes because you're going to counter the hell out of it. There's no way. And so instead of just making these oppressive commanders, find a theme that you love. Just find something that is a little bit off the wall, a little bit something that people don't expect, and build around that theme instead. And so if you're playing Toxrill, don't play Toxrill, play -1/-1 counters.
Yeah.
If you're playing for Tyrgrid, if you're playing Tyrgrid, I mean, yeah, you're probably playing Hand Disruption and Sacrificing. That's just the way that it, and so it's, so yes, you're gonna make something that is powerful and oppressive, but you don't want to build it around your commander, because honestly, and more times than not, with those sort of oppressive commanders, you won't get to play them.
You won't get to play. You yourself as a player won't get to play. You know, like, it's kind of like, oh, you're the kind of person to play that. Well, you're going to be gone. Play removal is the best removal. Bye. You know, like, that mentality is going to come with you no matter what. Which is why I'm saying, be fearless. If you're going to play those commanders, you know, definitely try to be accountable. Especially, don't be like, oh, this is the reason why I built this for this X and Y reasons. Because largely, a lot of the time, people are just like, well, I had a lot of bad times with some experiences, and I just really wanted to make a deck that really, you know, exemplified my inner emotions about how much I hate humanity. And yeah, unfortunately, that does kind of show. And for the majority of it, I'm looking at you, Baral players, like, what the fuck are you making a commander after counter tribal? Like, don't do that. You're never, ever going to have fun. Well, that said, there's a place for you. There's a the amount of times that I have literally on spell table or anywhere else been like, oh, let me do what my deck do. Like, no, your deck is about sheer unadulterated oppression. There is no reason for anybody other than you to look at you as if you're not the most extreme challenge at the table. It doesn't matter if you're playing your commander or not. Your deck is blue control. Well, guess what? Everyone's going to glare at you if you don't win.
I will say, we're going to glare
if you do win. So
we're recording some episodes this Sunday for some gameplay and stuff, and we're doing PDH. And I really wanted to build Crackling Drake in PDH, but most of the lists that I've been looking at and stuff, and like the general direction, is very like counter heavy, very control. And I was like, I don't know if I want to play control in fucking PDH. Like, it seems very oppressive.
Like, and exhaustive, honestly. Yeah. A lot of the counter spells out there, if it is control, I think the curve, with the exception of some of the newer commons being released, can meet the challenge. It's like we're seeing a lot of really cool. Like, even just recently, you showed me that one. It's like you flash it in, and if you kicked it, it deals X damage for the amount of attacking creatures you control.
Yeah.
Oh, man. Like, sure, there's
It's not
still...
even you control. It's attacking creatures.
That's what I love about it. So there's still a cool demographic of PDH, but there's definitely like a weird... like the power creep cannot be argued with. So it's interesting to see how something that can be adapted to. I think, if anything, there'll be a lot more stronger commons to make weaker PDH commanders more viable, but yeah.
Yeah. I did order a bunch of cards for that PDH deck that I wanted to play this weekend.
I can play Crackling Drake if you don't like it.
I didn't order Crackling Drake. I ordered Phalanx Leader, the mono white. But the cards only shipped yesterday, so they're not going to show up in time. I know they're not going to show up in time. So I got to go. I'm going to go to First Player. I'm going to buy a random deck because they actually stock some like pre-built CDH or PDH decks. I'm just going to go and snag one or two of them. They're dirt cheap. PDH decks are so cheap. The Phalanx Leader one, face-to-face games, I filled a cart with 80 some odd cards that I wanted to put in the deck, like more than I needed, $27 or something. It was like,
people want to complain about, oh yeah, no, it's pay to win in this game. I'm like, actually, sometimes it's pay less to win.
Yeah, you want, if you're worried about, if you don't like fast mana, if you don't like Toxril, if you don't like Turgrid, if you don't like these things, try PDH, please. It is
a breath of fresh air.
It's the kind of combat that you'll get out of a draft environment. It's the kind of, still, you got stuff like Counterspell and Brainstorm. Mm-hmm. And, like, there's still really powerful commons.
Oh, it's insane. You have Impact Drummers, you know? But you have...
fucking Whisper Silk Cloak. Rhystic Study's a common.
How many more... wait, what?
Rhystic Study, the first printing of Rhystic Study is common. So, like... Popper is a very interesting format. Popper is a very interesting format, and I really, really heavily recommend that you try it.
If we haven't sold you already, we're talking on top of the thousands of pre-existing commanders, literally, like legendary creatures in existence.
You open up the only uncommon creatures.
Yeah, only so many in the Dawning Age now of reprints, where many of them have been produced or printed as uncommons, with all pre-existing uncommons creatures, okay? Yep. In the game, we are talking...
uncommon creature.
Oh, I almost said in the hundreds of thousands, but that's just what it feels like.
Yeah.
No. There is a lot. Like, I've definitely seen someone playing...
25,000 magic cards out there?
25,000? So what? Unique? You have like 14,000 something commanders, probably something like that, right? Like,
I know it's thousands.
It's insane. Over 10,000.
And I mean,
guarantee over 10,000.
With PDH, creatures. You don't have to make it, it doesn't have to be legendary.
Yeah, no, you open up a lot of options.
Oh, yeah.
I think I've heard it said somewhere that you have about 4,000 options as commander.
Yeah.
So I know that's got to be a little.
I believe it.
Probably. I don't know if it's the same or more. Anyway, it's fun. It's great. I do think we should move this towards an end step.
Absolutely.
And wrap this bitch in paper, ship it off, send it to the post office.
And stamp. Get the fuck out of here like a tree, right?
Yeah. Boondock Saints.
Make like a tree and get the fuck out of here.
I was just talking about that movie the other day. With the really scene nice where he hits the table and shoots the cat. His gun goes off and the cat just explodes on the wall. And then there's just like this big pause and they're like, is it dead?
Yes.
Beautiful, beautiful movie. All right. Thank you so much, of course, for listening to the Rogue's Passage podcast. All of our silly bullshit and us ranting about Turgrids and
Toxrills.
And
how many times did I say Toxrill this episode? I want to know.
At least five.
Yeah.
Thanks for indulging our nerdiness about sci-fi and nerd dune alien stuff. And you know what? Anyway, I love you guys.
We're just beautiful.
Get out of here.
See you later. You don't have a glass. Here.
Screw that guy.
See you guys later. Bye.
Bye.